Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell. Today is going to be a blast. I have Noelle and Melissa from Governess, and we're talking all things CPG. And for those that don't know in that space, that's consumer product goods. And it's going to be a really fun conversation because, one, I've got two guests at the same time, and this is the first time we've even talked, but we have a mutual acquaintance, if you will. Maybe that's the best way to put it. But before we roll into some of those questions, maybe Noelle and Melissa, take, you know, a quick, you know, 2 minutes to introduce who you are, your background a little bit, and then we'll dig into how Governess started.
Sure. Yes. So I'm Melissa Blazer, founder of Governess. I started my career in big ad agencies as a copywriter, and for the first 17 years of my career. So TVWA, Shia Day, Chris from Porter & Bogusky, David and Goliath. And that is where I first got to work on CPG. So I did a campaign for Hillshire Farm called Go Meat. And then, you know, I did a Pepsi Super Bowl spot. So got to work on like really big CPG brands, which was super fun. And then left after about 17 years, not left, but just went adjacent to work with founders directly. Building food brands, we work in CPG, not just food. So food, beverage, beauty, and climate food tech. And that's where we are today. And I'll kick it over to Noelle.
Hi, I'm Noelle, head of design at Governess, and been working with Melissa for 5 or 6 years now. We are continuing to just, time has us passing by. But so I started my career actually as an intern in New York at Pentagram, and then have been moving my way west ever since. So then was in Chicago and worked at a small design studio. Chicago, woo! At a small design studio called Grip, and did a lot of work with Boca Restaurant Group. So worked with Chef Giuseppe Tintori, and also Chef Bill Kim did the mural at Urban Belly, actually.
Did you really? No way. Yeah. Shut up. You did the mural at Bill Kim's restaurant?
Yeah, Urban that Belly, is, yeah.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Bill and I know Bill. We've done projects with some of the things that we do here. So it is such a small world.
He's amazing, too. He's just, one time my friend and I were walking by, we're about to go grilling, and he ran in and made us like a little spice and sauce toolkit to go throw on our meats. And it's just like the love that whole community is so great. So and then after that, Chicago, moved to LA, and then started working with Melissa in a different facet of food, which is packaged food. So from, you know, restaurant branding over to packaged food, and love of food follows. So that's, and we have been, you know, building small to medium brands ever since.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Melissa, okay, you said you jumped adjacent. You'd been kind of in that CPG with some of the bigger guys in the space. But what made you actually want to branch out? What said, you know what, I can do this on my own?
Well, you know, I was freelancing, and then, you know, I had actually done a restaurant with an interior design friend, Tatum Kendrick, who's amazing. And she did a restaurant interior for Jacob Bell, who's an ex-football player from the NFL in San Diego. And so that was called SoCal. And she brought me in to do the branding, and messaging was a huge part. My words were all over the restaurant. And a lot of startups are down there. And Kiana Cabell from Kapari Beauty walked in, and they were starting a new coconut beauty line, coconut beauty brand. And she walked in and said, I want whoever did, you know, this branding and the words on the walls. And I was like, and so she reached out to me. Jacob gave her my name, and she came to LA, met me. And then she's like, let's build a brand voice. And so that's kind of when I realized, like, oh, it's not just design. Like, founders really need a brand voice. You know, design gets like a lot. That's what everybody's sucked in by, the visuals. But the brand voice, if you can do those together, it really pops and makes a personality for the brand. Makes people really understand you and want to be friends with your products and your brand, and creates that emotional pull, I think, and it fills the emotional white space. So that's when I was like, oh, I can write all day. I'm a writer. And so we built this kind of like brand voice process for these brands and startup brands. And that's kind of our differentiator now. So yes, we do packaging design, and that's Noelle. She runs the design studio. We're very small too. We're 5 people. And we kind of like it that way. But having that messaging expertise, and we have a writer's room, and one of our writers is in London, and we pull different voices in, and that we build these robust copy toolkits in addition to doing packaging, visual design, all of that kind of stuff. So that's where I started as a messaging agency, because it's fun and I love to write. And then we kind of built it out from there.
Okay, because we're on the subject of writing and it's such a hot topic today, AI, obviously. Yep. What impact, both positive and or negative, you know, to you and your business? Because it can obviously be a very powerful amplifying tool. But from your perspective, especially because that's copywriting, I mean, that's AI does a lot of that. What are your thoughts on it?
On AI? So my thoughts are, if we ask AI to write a brand voice, it's terrible. Like, it's terrible in the beginning. We really have to, like, human creativity, and because AI is pulling from what everybody else has done. If you want something truly ownable and differentiated and a voice for your brand, we have to have humans write it. And I pull, you know, it's me and 2 other writers, and we build that first and create this like really robust copy toolkit of actual messaging. And and we find it with the client. We don't know the voice. Do we poke holes and go, do we swear? Do we go safe? We don't know what it is until we start writing it and the client reacts. You can't really do that with AI. What you can do after you have that beautiful copy toolkit, the client can then take that, load it into AI to create more in that voice.
Okay. That makes total sense. Yeah. So when you're creating the voice of these brands and you're seeing reactions to what they're saying, is the driver when writing and creating the voice, is it dialed in towards, you know, what they want? Is it a mix of also what the market wants? Because I've seen a lot of stuff that come out and people are like, I love this. And I'm like, your product sucks. Not even on the marketing side, just even if it's a taste thing, people send stuff and they're like, hey, can you try this? It's the greatest thing since, you know, sliced bread. And then I try it and I give my truly honest feedback. I'm like, I'm going to be very blunt and honest with you. This was not good. And I'll give them all the reasons, all the things. It was too spicy. It was too bitter, whatever it is. So how do you then work with those founders on creating that voice?
Yeah. Well, first of all, that's how we met, is because you reviewed Realm's product. They sent it to you and I saw your video. I'm like, oh my God, he gets it. Because it is like, crunch your brains out is one of our headlines, right? And it really is the crunchiest thing I've ever tasted. It's amazing. But you gave a great review on it, and my kids love it. And you said your kids love it too. Anyway, so how do we create the voice? We start from the beginning. We start with ideally we have our consumer research and brand strategy team work, like talk to consumers, find those insights. Why are they buying? It's not just the what, it's the why. Mm-hmm. What is that emotional pull that makes them want to buy, and building this brand world around it? So we get a lot of those insights. We get like 5 messaging buckets. What are the reasons to believe? Why, you know, you build that first. And then from that, that briefs our writer's room to know what to write. And we have a lot of fun. Our messaging is very approachable. It's funny. It's witty. That's kind of our style. And then that goes at the same time as design. So we kind of work together and all pops in the end, and design pulls our language and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think it is a fact-finding mission to a voice-finding mission where we don't know what it is. We don't know. The voice kind of builds itself and we hit on something and the client loves it. And it's this iterative process that we do. And it's a really intensive 2 weeks that we do it. And we build these, and it all comes from these like key insights and based on the consumer, really. It's all from the consumer, who they are, what are their motivations. That's like a really important piece. So
then you build the voice, and I want to bring Noelle into this too. Then that's when the visuals really start to come to alive. You have the idea, but now you're making it concrete, visual to see what that voice is in physical form, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And also in like typographic choices, so like what fonts do you use? It's like, how that actually changes the feel of a message as well. So I think like what's really nice about how we work together is like we want people to understand like most of the brands we work with are approachable, and the variations of that depend on kind of strategy and what the product is. But, you know, we're in food packaging, typically food, beauty, beverage. It's like, we're not in a crazy serious industry. We want people to enjoy it, have fun, and like interact with the brands in a fun way. So the choices are, I think, on to accentuate all ladder up to everything we've already done, right? So what does it taste like? People love it. Why do they love it? Okay, what do we say about it? Okay, how do we then show it? And then that's just a process of, you know, choosing different things that are appropriate to what we're trying to communicate. So it sounds kind of vague, but we could like, you know, dive into one of our clients, for example, June, which is a pistachio brand. They had this recipe from Alex and Cody, or the founders, and Alex's grandmother had this recipe that's like 300 years old from Persia. And so it's, they brine the pistachios instead of roasting them. And so it imparts a really different flavor and also a color. So the pistachios are more of this, like, have this pink kind of look to them too, on the skins. And so they wanted to have a nod to that old world recipe and heritage, but also be for a modern consumer. And so the look and feel of the brand came out of that, knowing that, like, so we art directed, art directed a really great illustrator to do the illustration. And I wanted it to be an airbrush style, so that it could be, have kind of that like historic feel, but from a different kind of era too. So it feels kind of like a textbook illustration, but also with a little bit of a nod to the 80s. And also, it's not, you know, photorealistic, but how do we bring out that flavor and that enjoyment of the food while also being artistic and understanding all the other elements of the brand storytelling that we're trying to bring together? And so that's kind of some of the process that we're trying to do with whatever.
And branding's everything. It just hit my head mind because you talked like old school, like back in the day. I mean, look what happened with Cracker Barrel. They redesigned logo, and what happened? It was, there was such uproar, and it's like, it's a picture, right? It's the logo, but no, it's the brand. People felt the change. Yeah. So it's not just a picture, but it's an identifier of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and shout out quickly to Joshua Ariza, who's the illustrator for June. So I didn't say his name. He's great. And Cracker Barrel is, it's really interesting too, because we talk, Melissa and I, and our customers and clients, and we all talk about like blanding, how there's a lot. And I think people bring about like, oh, minimalism or things getting stripped back. Sometimes that's really necessary. But for Cracker Barrel, what made it interesting is like all the complexity of like, and funkiness and kind of like kitschiness, that all the messiness of it actually was what made it feel like a textured brand. And so flattening that out is why people reacted so negatively to that. There might, if you're working on an like aerospace company, having like really clean technical visuals and brand make a lot of sense. But like, it's just like thinking about the whole world of a brand is also what we do. It's like world building.
So we're going to kick back into the realm, how we kind of met initially. I absolutely love Lauren and Elise. I work with Elise more than Lauren, but the pair of them, their energy, their vibrance. So Melissa, like, talk about when you're looking, it's probably a two-way street, you know, kind of like an interview of what you're looking for in these founders or these brands, and then kind of the flip side, like what they're looking, you know, on the cross side from you guys.
Yeah. I mean, well, we started working with Lauren and Elise when we did the smoothies. So we've been with them for so many years, and I think you know them from Smoothie World as well.
Yep.
And
yep.
You know, we got them into food service, like that's that whole world. So we have been working with them for that long, and we just love them. Like we are, they have that founder energy, and they were like, you know what? Now we want to create a snack brand, and we're like, okay, let's do it. What's it going to be? Like we were there from the very beginning. I think the smoothie business, they let it be what it is, but they had so much heart for, we want to build a snack and we want it to be this and real food. And it was like we are just so impressed with them, and they're so, as you know, so lovely to work with. And so we were like totally on board. And I mean, so they were an existing client. That's how, you know, we just kind of brought along, we were brought along in the process. But I think that was so exciting because our strategist Goldilocks, we brought them in, or they brought them in too. And we created this new strategy, or they created the strategy for us to brief us. But it was our brand brief in short was like, you know, what are we supposed to eat anymore? Like, it's like, there's all these claims and all this wellness bullshit out there. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear,
yeah,
but like,
yeah, 100%.
Okay. But it's basically like food without the fuckery, like call out the ridiculous, overcomplicated, yes, unresearched, ever-changing food rules while creating this delicious snack rant made from normal ingredients. Like, we just want to eat real food. And that was so exciting for us to build because they wanted to be really bold. And they weren't afraid, and they're not afraid to swear, and they're not afraid to just tell it like it is. And that was like candy for us to like build and create. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, yeah, to go back to like the original question too, it's like that is who we're looking for, is the founders who have a vision and are wanting to go for it. And I feel like when we have calls with new business calls, there's usually something that it's a little bit it's nebulous to kind of find out as you know it. It's like, you know it when you see it, it's people who are passionate and driven and understand what they're wanting to build. And they want to collaborate with us as a partner to be able to bring it to market. And because we know how to do that. But we also trust our clients to know their end of it and know the product and how they want to build it. And we're there to learn and also bring the brand together with them. So people who are, that's kind of a high level view of like the people we really like working with.
Have there been times when you've done these calls or interviews to a degree where you either A, love the people and hate the product, or love the product and hate the people, and you just passed because you wanted both? Or is that a thing? Do you want both, that you kind of, I'm not saying you have to believe in a product. I think most people that are in our space, it's much easier to create and develop when you also believe in the product that a company is putting forth or a founder is putting forth. But what would you say to that original question of you love the product, hate the founder, or dislike, and then the flip?
I was going to say, I don't think we've really ended up working with anybody we really don't like. We love everyone we work with. Like, it's, if we're on a call and the fit seems really wrong, that means we're going to have a really wrong fit for 6 months or however long we end up working with them. So it's just not, you know, we all love you. but from a product standpoint, sometimes, I mean, if it's out in the world, we try it. It's part of the research process. And some of us love some of the products. Some of us are, not all products are for everybody. So it kind of is like, we might not be the demographic, but typically we do really like all the products that we're working with. And then also sometimes we haven't been able to try it yet because it's in development. So we get to be part of the process of even Realm, you know, they were developing different spice blends and trying different textures and types of vegetables and all that. So we are to be part of the process and trying that, which is really cool because we got to give our feedback too. And I think you did as well on that. Yeah. As part of the process. So sometimes we don't know, but we trust our clients to make something great.
Yeah. I love it. And especially with them, to your point, Melissa, you said that they're so open to feedback and they want to create something different in the market space, and you can see it, you can feel it, and they're receptive to all feedback, good, bad, and different. You know, on the smoothie side, I've been like, hey, this is going to work, this isn't going to work. And they're like, great, how do we make it work? And if we can't make it work, then how do we pivot? And when they had mentioned they wanted to come up with a snack product, I was like, this is going to be amazeballs. Like, I was like, I don't know what it is, but when you have it, let me know. And then they started going through it and they told me, and I was like, yes. And then as soon as I got those samples, I was like, yes, because I'm a healthy snack eater. I try not to eat junk food snack. And when I got to try them, I was like, yes, a snack that, again, is good for you. But there's only so many out there. And the price point is usually what just kills me, is they're so expensive that I can't eat the healthy snack because I can't pay $20 for a bag of chips. And I think they've found that kind of happy balance. So shout out to them for sure. What makes a company gutsy, right? We're talking about them and their personality, but what is a gutsy company?
I think it's someone with a POV. They have a unique point of view that they don't want to be like everybody else. They're ready to do things a little differently. And that could be in their product. It could be in the branding. They have this personality. Not all founders want to be founder-facing brands. So some do and want to be the face of the brand because that's their personality, and some don't. And that's, neither way is wrong. Both are cool. But I think having that passion and that unique point of view, it's the ones that we work with that do really well, right? So they stand out in the marketplace. And I guess, yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, because they also, like, if you don't, what do we always say is, like, you don't stand for something, you don't stand for anything, and people don't love you, people also aren't going to hate you. If you're just in the middle with no point of view, yeah, you might get some people who like you, but you're not going to have people who love you. And so gutsy is really being able to put a stake in the ground and say, this is who we are. And that is who we work with, because that's what we define with our clients. And so almost like them even coming to us and allowing us to do our work makes them kind of in definition a gutsy company, because people who don't want our approach won't work with us. So we tend to be really lucky and have people with a point of view and want us to bring it to the world.
Yeah. And the brands you work with, you, from what I saw, are pretty conscious, good for the planet, good for people. You know, why was that lane the one you chose when there's so many you can go down?
I think better for you is, you know, it's a within CPG, the better for you CPG is kind of what we love. It's how we eat healthy snacks. I have kids, you know, I think that's our own belief system. I feel like, we love that space, and even clean beauty and all of that with, climate food tech. We've worked. I love telling that story too. Lower Carbon Capital brought us to Minus Coffee, and that was like a planet forward kind of unfuck the planet kind of thing. And that was like super exciting. And so I like being able to tell these stories and talk about the brand in a different way, so that, you know, even like with climate food tech, for example, it's like nobody wants to eat science, but they want it if you warm it up. And you tell the story in a right way about the planet, or, you know, and the planet is not all of our clients. It's like, you know, some of them, but that it's just a really exciting opportunity to tell that story and, you know, in a different way. So,
yeah. And I will say too, like, we're not like blind to the fact, like, we're in packaging design, and packaging is part of a waste system, as is all consumption. So we think about, wherever we can, it's like, can we reduce parts of the packaging? Can we, where are places we can use better materials? It's tricky in food, to be honest. It's like things have to be shelf stable and food safe. And that's a really hard part of our industry that, you know, people are making solutions, and that's exciting. But, you know, we try to do the best we can. And I don't know, that's a... So we can't, you know, we're trying to do it all, but we have limitations too.
Oh yeah, for sure. We've brought up the word story quite a few times. I'm a big believer of a brand not only needs a voice, but there has to be a story that's told within from that voice, if you will. Mm-hmm. What do you, I know it's a collaboration, but again, maybe it's just for somebody who's starting out, right? They're thinking about starting a brand. They're thinking about starting a product. What should they be thinking about when they're thinking about their voice, and then ultimately what's their story to tell? What would you say to some of those new founders?
I mean, it has to come from something, right? They're not just coming up with it to make money. Like, what is their why? Why did they create this. That's like usually the backing of any founders, any great founder has a why. They created this because there was a need in their life or somebody else's life. And they, you know, they really believed in it. So for example, with Realm, it's like, you know, they were bored of these wellness gurus' life stories, right? And they wanted to push against that. And so they imagined a POV that would feed Thelma and Louise on a long day, a long dusty road trip, right? So Realm, they want the primal joy of versus like the food pyramid scheme kind of thing. I'm snacking with a refreshingly honest point of view. So it's a veggie chip at the end of the day, a delicious one. But the only thing is this, you know, that this product cures is the munchies. It's not going to be wellness. So they really wanted to push against wellness culture because they were like tired of it and sick of it. And that's what brought us to where the packaging and voices today on that branding.
But then how does one tell the story? They have the why. They yep. figure, okay, I want to go against this. How do you tell the story in the marketplace that's going to be successful? Anyone can tell a story, but how do you make it successful?
You hire us. I will help you tell it. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's talking to consumers. You gotta talk to consumers. That's who's gonna give you what's, you know, what are they looking for? Does this story resonate with them? You know, we have a brand we're working with right now, and their founders call customers all the time to talk to them. And I think that's really valuable. A lot of it's testing it out and putting it out there and what is resonating with people and getting that feedback. So I think building the voice is, you know, if you're not a writer, you gotta bring in writers to do it. I don't think that's natural for every founder to do. That's why they hire people like us.
Mm-hmm. And just thinking about like a successful brand, especially now, is like there's a billion touch points for how people are going to interact and see you. So it's like, there's, if you're in retail, it's you're on shelf. That might be the first time someone ever comes and encounter you, or it's an ad online or like social media, or, you know, someone comes across a website. So there's all these different touch points, or a pop-up event, sampling. So all of those places are places where there are opportunities for brand building and success. So like telling the story, how do your salespeople talk about the brand? How do your ads talk about the brand and look, and how is your photography done? And how is your, you know, how's your packaging displayed, and what's your sell sheet look like? And what does it say? So all those little pieces are part of that world building that we talk about. And so how does that make it successful? We do everything we can, but then there's a marketing team and business building after we lay the foundation for the brand to be successful. And then, you know, they have a business plan to go ahead and work with it, but we create all the pieces to make that possible.
Yeah. And I ask a lot of these questions selfishly because, you know, as I've had my own thing for now almost 2 years and don't have a product per se, it's mostly services, but still, I think even with services, you have to build a brand, you have to build awareness. People have to know who you are if they want to use you. And so I'm still on that journey of telling a story and finding, you know, exactly what that niche is. So some of these questions, you're like, wait, it's a little bit selfish on my own end of figuring it out, because I do a lot of storytelling for equipment. So less food, but more pieces of equipment in the kitchen. And what is that story is a little different. It's not always about the founder and this and that, because again, it's not a physical consumption product, but we have to try and figure out how to tell a story on a piece of equipment. And that could be challenging in and of its own right when it's one piece of equipment that does one specific thing. It's how many angles can you attack it? So that's why I ask some of these questions for my own selfish wondering.
Yeah, I think. Let's talk about it. I mean, you are super relatable. I saw you on LinkedIn. I was like, oh, like I'm going to like reach out to that guy. Like that's part of your story. You're very relatable. How you talk, it's very human. You know, when you talk about a big piece of equipment, like how is that going to help humans, or what is it? That's like classic advertising, right? Like find that mm-hmm. human truth and what that is. That's really the crux of it, is like pulling that in. That's going to be relatable to your audience and warm it up, you know?
Yeah, I've been trying. I want to be the real person. I've been around. I was in corporate America in the food industry for 15-ish years. I saw all the shadiness, the nastiness that goes on. And it kind of reminds me of like food products, right? The shadiness, the nastiness that goes into a lot of these food products that are out on the market. And I was like, why not just be real and me? And eventually enough people will see it, right? And want to cling on or be a part of said journey versus being someone that's fake and everything has to be perfect and everything is fucking unicorn and rainbows and sunshine when it's not. This shit is hard. It takes a lot of work and effort for any company. So how did you, like, in the beginning, you had that one client, but how did you really grow and get your brand? How did you define your own brand voice and tell your story?
Well, so it was very organic, right? So I worked with Kapari, their investor group, and Lightning Ventures kicked me over to Suja Juice. They had Suja as well. And so went there, did the brand voice thing with Heather Cox, was the CMO at the time. I think my manifesto was still on the wall at Suja HQ. And then when she left there, she took me with her to join as, she was the GM of Cleo Snacks. And that's, we rebranded Cleo Snacks. And that was in 2018. And that was when I was like, we rebranded them. It was voice and visuals and photography and all of that. But the packaging still stands today. It's the same pack. And there's the same line on the pack that we wrote 8 years ago, which was, hi, we're the people who like to eat yogurt with our hands. It's nice to meet you. Still there. But like that one line became like the flagship line, and that resonated with everybody. And that's when I was like, oh, this is so fun. Like people are, they were talking to the packaging on social. It's like, there was like a conversation happening with the branding. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And I was freelance at the time. And Heather called me, the rebrand did really well. And it was like, hey, we can't deal with freelancers anymore. I need to go to an agency. And I just said, I'll be your agency. And I became Governess, like on the spot. It's going to be called Governess. Here we are. And the reason I love Governess is because I am a big fan of Sound of Music, the movie. And Marie Von Trapp is a governess and she takes care of all the children. And I feel like I'm taking care of all these brand children. That's kind of my
The tagline used to be, it's we raise young brands. So
yeah.
That was our original, the OG. And then we kind of grew from there. So, you know, I brought on Noelle and we have, you know, Goldilocks is actually Heather Cox that I worked with at Cleo. She has since left to start Goldilocks, which is a strategy consultancy. So we've been working together for over a decade and the process just really works, like all these things coming together. And we don't do everything either. We're so small. We stay in our lane. We know what we're really good at. We're not going to build giant websites. We're not going to tell you we can do social media. We have partners for that and we really have expertise in this one thing, but it has just been a really fun, like keeping the fun in it. And that has been really important to us. We all really like love working together and it's every brand is fun. It's a new opportunity. And so I think if it wasn't fun, we wouldn't do this because it's really hard. But I think that's what kind of keeps us going.
Yeah. So. I was going to say how you foster creativity inside the team. I can feel it just talking to the two of you, even via the internet. You can feel the energy and being small, you can be nimble. But how do you continue to foster that creativity and keep that spark alive every day?
Good question. I was like, how do we? Yeah. I mean, I think too, like we take care of each other. I think that's a big thing is like if somebody needs time or space and we, because we're small and we care about each other, we allow for that. I mean, that's like speaking of the messiness, it's hard. Like we all go through life changes and have hard things happen. And sometimes clients are tricky and work is tricky. And I do think having speaking of the human connection, like having each other for support is really how we kind of have a foundation of that. And it's how we keep going is because we want to grow together.
Yeah, like our Slack, we don't talk shit about anybody. It's a very like positive bias on everybody. And I think that's like, it's just the nature of who we have, which is full. And I don't think anybody, like someone who came in with a negative bias, like they wouldn't fit. It would be very apparent, but we just really love each other and love the work we're doing. And I think we're always like in Slack, like sending funny stuff or, hey, I saw this, like keep the inspiration going. And we all get together and we have retreats and we like make sure to like keep the fun happening. So,
How big do you take this, right? It's a small team. Some people have big aspirations. Is it just picking more clients? There's always a fine balance of how far somebody wants to go. And then usually, unfortunately, that's when you see all of a sudden they turn into the ugly corporate monster. How big does Governess go? Where does it go from today on?
I think we can grow. We have ambitions to grow bigger for sure and do more things. I don't think we ever want to be a 100-person company. It's just not who we want to be. We like being small and it works for us. I think we can grow a little bit. I do want to hire more people and get to a certain point, but never like where I'm not in the day to day and I'm not talking to founders and I don't have ambitions to do that. So
yeah
we like to get our hands dirty.
Yeah, but you're so much more nimble when you're small. That's the beauty of it, is the turnaround time can be so much faster than all the red tape you have to go through. As you know, the layers of thing, hey, can I do this? Well, we got to go up another rung and then another rung. And then, wait, we got to go adjacent now and make sure that's approved. Oh, wait, that's got to go up another rung. And then by the time it circles back, it's 8 months and whatever it is you're trying to get approved, you're like, this is, it's not going to work now. Like the world has changed and now this doesn't work. So I think those small teams definitely allow you to be able to accelerate, you know, a company much faster probably than a bigger agency.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. And take risks on people who, you know, maybe nobody else gave them a chance, but we really believe in them. Like we can make those decisions and make those choices and you have more fun when there's less layers. I think you can, you know, not be so afraid to do things.
Yeah. Where do you think brand storytelling is going over the next few years? You know, we talked about that minimalist, but it works here and there. Where is the trend going given the state of the world today?
Noelle, you want to talk about it from a design point?
Yeah. And I think from design and from, I think voice too is like, and this is sort of, we'll see how it plays out, but the more AI slop there is, the more human created content is actually going to resonate. It's sort of like, oh, you actually critically thought and put time and effort and care into this. I think that's also why our clients do well, because the work we do gives them an edge. Even before AI was starting to dominate everything, you see that. Even if you look at like in social media where people are sharing things about how things aren't going perfectly or funny insights of things that actually happened in their lives. It's not bland. Like that's where we're talking about being human. Like that relatability is what breaks through. So I think imperfection is maybe the future trend. And I think that's happening in voice and in design. Like you'll see there's a lot of super clean minimalist design. And now we're kind of going more towards more hand-on things or funky weird layouts or maximalist or things that are not perfect, because, and hopefully it's not just because AI like didn't put the right words on something, but you can tell when it's that versus what somebody created. Mm-hmm. I think imperfection imperfection on purpose is I think where the trend is probably going to be going.
Do you think you can just do that? Because then it almost—I'm playing this in my head. It's almost like you're thinking, okay, I want to be flawed, but I'm going to present myself as such. Or is it just being natural? Or is it more just being natural, and then what comes across that is flawed in whatever brand it is, that's what's going to come across more so than, okay, let's think about, let's not be perfect. So then let's do this, which in reality, you're actually playing the same thing of you're trying to do exactly what you're saying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I think maybe it's like the imperfection on purpose. It's more just like be human. Which is, I think that's a great question, because it's not just, I think too, in a lot of brand systems and voice systems and visual systems, it's like, follow this, use this color here, use this headline here, always use this. Whereas like the way things are going is like the system of a brand and the way people interact with a brand is not a corporately controlled like you have this TV spot and then you have, you know, this newspaper ad, and that's been happening forever. I mean, mm-hmm. since the internet. But now, because there's just so many more brands, the more authentic you can be, the more human, the more layered you are, the chance you have to break through and connect with people. So maybe it's not the imperfection, but it's more just like letting things be more honest. And that's more of a voice situation versus like with design. I think you do need to have some structure and system, but then allow for creativity to evolve it. That maybe is what is more what I'm getting at, is like not so rigid and controlled and like polished as much as it's, hey, if like your social media designer decides to like do a bunch of other stuff with the design, but it still relates to the brand, but it's interesting, like great, like that's still part of it, is but making it feel like it's part of that personality.
Yeah. Some of the projects you're working on now, I was looking through the website and I love your website. Maybe give some insight. What are some of those cool projects you're working on now? Again, not doesn't have to be just food, because I know you guys are doing more than just food. But since we're on a food podcast, we'll start with those and then branch into some of those others.
Well, we launched, so June, we talked about June Pistachios. We launched them this year, and we won a packaging, a first place dye line award for that. That was very cool. Awesome. And then we also launched House of Yes, which is a new kids snack bar by Sari and Michael Lewis. And they live in Connecticut, which is also where I'm from. And they created this new snack bar. We've helped them with this. We did all the branding. We did the naming. And they just launched and got their first shipment this month. It's super exciting. But that is their problem to solve was their kids didn't want to eat vegetables and fruits or anything like that. And so it is a really healthy kid snack bar with a low sugar, but it is delicious. It tastes like a chocolate chip cookie. They did R&D. I mean, taste is king. So if it's not going to taste good, they'll buy it once, but they're not going to keep buying it. My kids just want to eat, shovel these in their mouth all day. So that says something. So that's really exciting. We also rebranded Kelsey's, which is like a raw food brownie bite. And it's in the refrigerated section. And they're lovely as well. Noelle, I don't know if we want to talk about them real quick.
Yeah, they're really great. They so Kelsey and Cassandra are the co-founders, and they already had product to market and had really great product, but it just kind of wasn't popping as much against, because in the fridge set too, you have a kind of a smaller area to display, a little bit recessed. So it's just a different challenge. And also the way that people shop the fridge section is really different than how they shop the aisle. It's slightly less like impulse purchasing there. And so they needed something that would stand out. So we started with strategy. And so that was how are people shopping this? Why do they love it? Why do they love the taste? And so we, speaking of, do we like the products that people have, and like what do people say about them, is like really liking a healthier, better for you brownie bite, and why. And so we wanted that to, and so it kind of came back to people really want the taste of an experience of that kind of fudge, but for it to be healthier, and the joy of experiencing that. So the out of strategy came the brand line, lick the bowl like a grown-up. So just like that joy of just being like, oh my God, I need this in my mouth right now. I need to lick the whole bowl. And so that line actually is on the front of the new packaging, because we wanted to bring that emotion through. And so the packaging is more minimalist, with going back to minimalism where it works. So we could show the bite picture versus before, you couldn't really tell. It was sort of a darker pack. You couldn't tell what the bite looked like. And that way, too, you could have the big headline on the front, too, and have the brand stand out in that shelf, refrigerated shelf. And so that's where some more minimalism works, because sometimes you just need something to pop. And then there's a checkerboard pattern that is inspired from kitchen tiles, because Kelsey, her mom was a raw food chef. And so that's how she learned how to make these. And so her experience of growing up in the kitchen and working on food with her mom is a special memory that's really not baked, because they're not baked, but baked into the brand. And And so that's also why that motif is there. And that comes from that storytelling. Even if people never know why that's there, it's still a decision from the brand story.
I love it. I love it that it's still telling the founder story. To your point, whether they know it or not, like a lot of people probably know it now, but when my logo, it's a corn microphone. Well, I grew up on a tiny little farm, literally in the middle of a cornfield. My dad took a plot of land that he was given from my grandfather, and he built our house. So I literally grew up in a cornfield. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a woman thing. Because my wife, I worked so hard on logo and colors and name. I don't even want to tell you how many hours I spent. I was like, I'm gonna rock this out. I can do this. And I'm coming up with designs. And at one point it was like a cow with microphone. And then it was a popcorn bucket with like the corn. I tried everything. And I was sending them to my wife left and right. I'm like, what do you think? And she's just like, these are all dumb. I was like, what? She just straight up. No filter. And I was like, oh, okay. She goes, just do something from like, you're from the country and like the cornfield. Like, why don't you just do like a corn microphone? Like, it kind of looks like a microphone. And I just bit my tongue and I was like, she's right. And I did my first iteration and I was like, I like it. And I've just recently updated it to a little more modernist, but I was like, it's something as simple as that. But it came so quick to her. I was like, wait, what? And again, my ego didn't want to accept it. Same with the name of the podcast. I was like, you know, what do I call it? How do I tell people what I do? And she's just like, she comes up with the name. She's like, why don't you just call it like Felon Food? I was like, again.
I don't know if it's a woman because your wife is like creative. So I feel like, yeah.
she just had the thing. But I think what I'm trying to get at is that we can overthink some of these concepts so much and we're so worried about what everyone's going to think when in the beginning, probably to your point, you rebranded a brand that had already been out in the marketplace. It just needed a refresh. It needed a new pizzazz to it, but they clearly had something that was working because people were buying it and they were in the marketplace. So I think people just need to think less a little bit sometimes about the beginning of it. You may think otherwise, but that's just kind of what I think. I think we just overthink things in the beginning.
There's different strategies, right? So absolutely. First of all, designing for or branding yourself is the hardest. Like, we struggle with that all the time. We're like, when you're trying to talk about yourself, it's very hard. So kudos that you do it and did it. But the other thing too is like with starting out, like there's kind of a couple approaches. One is like if you're bootstrapping or starting up and you want to find out if you have product market fit, doing that the way that Kelsey's was, like, they grew and they had this product and then they got to a point where like, okay, we want to grow more. Then we came in. So, or there's brands who are like, we want to hit the ground at 100 miles an hour. And so that's when you spend more time up front. And when you're launching and get into Whole Food buyer meetings, or, you know, trying to get into Target right away, or building a crazy direct-to-consumer platform, like that, there's different approaches. So, but it kind of depends like what you're trying to do, what your strategy is. So yeah, sometimes you just have to start sampling and go out to farmers markets and bootstrap. And sometimes if you've done it before, you know how it works, you can kind of just, you know, hit the ground running.
Yeah. Do you, maybe it's collaboration, do you guys help a brand with like, hey, you should go retail or food service, because they're completely different sides of the road. Do you help them with that process, or do they kind of say, this is the route we want to take, and then you guide them along that path?
I think it can be either, right? So a lot of times they come in, and actually nobody's ever come in and go, we want to go straight to food service. Everybody wants to be either D2C or retail. A lot of what's happening right now is everybody was D2C. Now they need to go retail, and that is a packaging change, because things on shelf have to be designed differently than on D2C, right? So that's a lot of the reason for a rebrand or why people come to us. And then the other side of it is Goldilocks, our strategy partner, they've been operators like at Cleo Snacks and at other brands. And so they have that operator hat on and they can do a go-to-market strategy. So that's also, they're brilliant at that as well. So they can look at it and go, you know what? This is your go-to-market strategy. We see you going here, here, and here, and this is your plan. So a lot of times, like, we'll bring them in if the founder that part, But with Realm, they wanted to go, they were direct to consumer. They wanted to go retail. And then they started talking to food service and they were like, oh my God, there's a huge opportunity here. So that was a very organic way that they got into food service. So.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of brands think about food service. Or like that's not their, to your point, they don't think about it. But the market is massive. It's very predictable. And that's what, you know, a lot of, they just want the, people see it on the shelf and they think flashy and consumer. But yeah, hit up food service sometimes, people listening, because it's a market that can help you grow your brand. And then you can go jump over to retail because you've got the sales, you've got the establishment kind of already set. So
Realm is going to go into food service and retail, right? You think that will play really well in food service?
I do, because if you look at, my specialty was education. And if you look at everything from these high schools to colleges, the way the food trends are, right? The groups that are going through, they're more conscious about what they're eating. Most of them have C-stores. I've seen high schools that look like colleges because that's how they're built, and they're, I don't know, that's for recruiting purposes. It's as crazy as that sounds, like some of these sports programs and other programs they have, they want to get kids in, and that food service is just another way of saying, hey, look what we can provide for your student. Full coffee bars, C-stores. It blows your mind at how much there is. And then obviously college, every college, you know, decent sized college has C-stores and retail outlets. The students are looking for something that isn't just Doritos, Fritos, you know, the typical, I hate to say it, Frito-Lay, you know, brand product. But it's very difficult to find those. As somebody that was a purchaser on that side for many years, it was difficult to find, again, something that tasted good, had a right price point, and that I could put on the shelf. And if someone saw it, they would say, I want to grab that. To your point, they may try it once and then say that it was fine. And then you're kind of up Schitt's Creek without a paddle because you committed to all these, you know, quantities. So I think that they will do well. It's always the leap of, do you put the chicken or the egg first, right? Between distribution and having the customers, right? Distributor usually doesn't want to take on said product because they want to know that the product's going to move, because their ultimate goal is just to get stuff in and out. They don't care at the end of the day, really, who it's coming from. They just want to know that it's got a home, that it can come in and it's going right out. So that's the tricky part with any brand, really. So when you find kind of your golden unicorn or that place where you can dig into, you know, that's usually how that distribution door opens. But my personal belief, I absolutely love the product. I think it's probably one of the best, you know, better for you snacks on the market, especially having three flavors. They didn't wedge themselves into just a one flavor market where it's like, this is what we have and we'll expand later. They've got some option, because I think depending on the segment or demographic area, that's going to change on what flavors potentially go out to the marketplace. But I have a feeling they will do very well.
Yeah. Well, we hope they will. It's a great product. So question for you about food service. You've mentioned, you know, people don't want to take a risk on brands that they haven't been proven out before. So do you find that mostly brands will do better in food service once they have proven retail traction and velocity, and then it's an easier sell-in? Or have you found, you said, oh, hey, maybe try going food service food service first, and then trying to also have a retail distribution strategy to direct consumer facing. Have you found either way to be more successful?
I think with food service, what it allows you to do is to really get a good sampling on that side to then see like what is needed. And depending on the product, I'm sure you guys know Sweet Lawrence cookies. Absolutely love those products. Great brand, great story, the whole thing behind it. I had first heard about it when I was at one of my universities, and I needed an answer to a problem, right? I needed a product that I could serve that wasn't my everyday cookie, but it didn't have any allergens, because that's the way things were going. And so I brought it in and tried it, and I was like, holy shit, like this is actually good. Like good. Like people would not tell that this is something different. So, you know, I kind of having those decisions said, yes, I want to bring this in. Like I made it happen. I was like, I don't care. We're going to jump through hoops. We're going to make that happen. So we brought them in, and then, you know, then it's usually a little bit easier because they can say, hey, here's a proven strategy. Here's where we're already at. And then on food service, what can be difficult is a lot of the food service management companies can get so big that everything has to be in the perfect buckets for them. And there's so much red tape to get through the layers, unless you truly know somebody that's in a position that can kind of sneak it under the radar, if you will. So a good strategy, in my opinion, would be look at some of the independent locations that aren't under the government of a contract management company. Look for those, because they have their own ability to buy what they want. And if they truly like something and they sample it to students and they buy it, they'll buy it. And then they can help force that distribution. And that's usually the best type of strategy. And then once you have enough under those, you're under your belt, then it's very easy to go to larger distribution, Dot Foods, et cetera, and say, hey, we have traction. Add this in. You're gonna see instant sales because we already have it. Or you're moving some of that volume that's direct and moving it into Dot, because most places have Dot in some capacity, whether using their broadliner, because a lot of broadliners pick up from Dot every day. You can use that route, or going Dot direct. That's usually the inlet. And I know Dot's getting harder and harder to get into because of their model and what they've done. But usually the golden key is Dot Foods for a lot of these brands.
Cool. So we'll just say, come talk to Jeff. But that's really interesting, I guess, like knowing too, it's like there's, you know, the labyrinths to, of course, navigate no matter where you're trying to get, which channels you're trying to use. And we find that too in retail, you know, knowing the right ways to approach it are key too. So.
Yeah, because everybody wants in. Everybody wants to give you samples.
Yeah.
But it's, you still have to weed out what's good, what's not. And to your point, some of that's market testing, which can be difficult because what demographic are you looking at? What age group? All those type of things. And one person's opinion isn't going to make or break. So that can be difficult. They send something into, you know, a home office and four people test it, taste it. One likes it, three don't. Well, what usually happens? It's shot down. Although the masses may say, no, this is really good. We really want it. And then you bring it in anyway. So there was a few products, I don't know them off the top of my head. I tried it. I was like, this tastes like absolute crap. But we would do some studies with some students. They're like, oh my gosh, we love this. And we'd bring it in and it sold well.
Interesting.
You know, my palate is different. My palate's different than that of a 17, 18 year old kid.
Yes.
So, and that's what people don't understand.
Well, when you spend decades refining your palate, that will happen. So.
So yeah. it can be difficult. I know we're coming up on time. So hit us up. Where do people find you if they want to see what you guys got going on?
Yeah. Yeah. You go to our website at wearegoverness.com. You can go to our Instagram. Is it also at wearegoverness? I think.
Yes, at wearegoverness.
Yes. And yeah, you can email me directly, melissa@wearegoverness.com or noelle@wearegoverness.com. You know, text me. I'm not going to give my phone number here, but I can get from you. We're very like, we like to talk and like, just, you know, we'll talk to anybody and like help people out and always have a conversation.
Yeah. Can definitely tell that you and your team, what you've built, that if you really are a brand looking to build and grow, great group to work with. Just from this small conversation, I could potentially see some collab in the future. Maybe we figure something out. And then if you're ever back in Chicago, Noelle, hey, I mean, we could always do something live, see the kitchen studio that we've got here. It's always fun time up in Chicago. So any parting words for the audience before we wrap up?
No, thank you so much for having us. This is our first podcast ever. So,
oh, really?
Yes. This was super fun.
I love real, honest conversations. I like showing sides of the food industry that don't get seen. CPG, people hear about it. They know about it. But what is the brand behind the brands? Because most successful brands usually have a governance driving them behind the scenes, and people have no clue what goes on this side. So I'm really glad that we were able to kind of unpack some of what goes on in your world, both from the storytelling and on the design side. So I think a lot of people will find this really helpful. And like Melissa said, if, you know, I'll put their emails, contact information in the show notes, but if you really want to have a serious conversation, reach out. I can put you in direct contact with them, and then you work it out, because it's got to be a fit on both sides for you to work with them. So with that said, thank you both again. And until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.